Daniel Shore is the last member of the broadcast team formed by the legendary Edward R. Murrow, who's still active in the news business. A career that began as a stringer for the New York Times continues to the present day here at NPR News. Shore's new book, Staying Tuned, A Life in Journalism, follows his remarkable six decades of reporting. Some of the most eventful years occurred after he opened the CBS News Bureau in Moscow. It was 1955, the height of the Cold War, and an exciting time to be a reporter.
What added to the excitement was the difficulty of getting your broadcast out. There was still in those days official censorship, and it made it very, very difficult to read a script on the air where there had been cuts made, which made no sense. So sometimes I would read what the censor had told me I couldn't read, and I was constantly in trouble.
You shot your own film? They gave you a camera?
Yes, they did not allow me to bring in a cameraman, so I had to put together pictures and sound into something which I called television pieces and send them on to New York, sending them out by whatever tourists happened to be around so that I could evade censorship.
You were in a lot of the right places at the right time. You were in Berlin when the wall went up.
Well, we knew something was going to happen in Berlin. So most of the correspondents stationed in Germany were in Berlin that Saturday night in August 1961. And yes, I was awakened in my hotel room at 4 o'clock in the morning and went down and found big lights on and the people were stringing barbed wire. The wall didn't start until a few days later. And they were closing off. They were sealing themselves into East Berlin because they were so worried about the exodus of thousands of East Germans who threatened to simply denude that country of its people. Then in 1989, I went back to Berlin for the sheer purpose of being able to walk through the Brandenburg Gate, which had been closed since 1961.
You came back home and carved out your own sort of beat. You
know, I had to. Well, just look, we had Dan Rather at the White House, right? We had Marvin Kalb at the State Department. We had Bob Schieffer at the Pentagon. So we had stars covering all of what were called the regular assignments. I had to come home because they wanted to close a bureau in Germany, the beginning of a very tragic thing about closing up on Europe and the world in general. But never mind, I was brought back to Washington without a specific assignment. And so finally I said, let me cover all the things which your stars are not covering. And Bill Small, my boss, asked, what would that be? I said, civil rights, health problems, environmental problems, the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, Department of HUD, and all of that. And he said, well, you won't get on the air very much. You know, these are not very sexy things. I said, well, but let me try.
You continued in that during the Nixon administration, and they must have been really impressed in the Nixon administration because they offered you a job.
When I started covering Nixon when he was inaugurated, he said he had seen a sign once in the campaign, a woman holding up a sign saying, bring us together, and that's what he intended to do. And I believed him. And he did some very good things at first. He started a program to extend food stamps to counties around the country which didn't have food stamps. He invented the Environmental Protection Agency, much forgotten now. And I was prepared to give him credit for all of those things. But then we got the other Nixon, the one who thought that people were out to destroy him, and of course, being part of the press, and because I criticized some of the programs, some of the things he was doing, he put me on an enemies list of those he considered who were out to destroy him. Also had the FBI investigate me. And the next thing I knew, they had to invent a job which they said the White House wanted to give me, which was the reason for the investigation, which was pretty silly. And eventually, that FBI investigation ended up in the articles of impeachment against Nixon. 20 years after he had left office, I saw him at a dinner, went up to him and said, Mr. Nixon, I don't know if you remember me. And he turned, put his arm on my shoulder. Sure, Dan, sure. Damn near hired you once.
Of course, there was Watergate, and there was a story just made for you, I think.
Watergate was in my investigative reporter days, which are now over near the age 85. Cronkite called me CBS's chief Watergate correspondent. And I did not make anything like the contribution of Woodward and Bernstein to that story, which was basically for a long time a newspaper press story, which television didn't cover very well. And when the Senate Watergate Committee held these hearings gavel to gavel, and all the three networks stopped all their daytime programming to carry them live, And there was I outside the room, the one who was supposed to give commentary hour after hour. It turned out to be a way towards fame simply because of the amount of time that I was on the air.
And I didn't miss a minute of it.
Well, thank you, but you were too young.
I was working nights, so I had all day to watch the hearings, and there you were.
Well, so then I don't know whether you saw what was the most electrifying moment in my career there, when somebody, I was live on television, somebody handed me the first list of the 20 Nixon enemies, and I had to read it without having had a chance to look at it, and at number 17 came to my own name. I read my own name, and afterward, as a real media enemy, I had to try to maintain control of myself. Whether I did or not, I don't know.
Later on, there was revelations about the activities of U.S. intelligence agencies, the CIA and the FBI and the National Security Agency, and you covered that.
Because I had no other assignment. Watergate was gone, and we said, what do we do now? Next thing, it was Seymour Hersh within the New York Times breaking stories about the CIA having conducted illegal surveillance of anti-war people, of having been involved in trying to bring down Allende in Chile. So CBS said, get our version of stories about what's going on in the CIA. Probably the biggest story I broke was to reveal that the CIA had been involved in assassination conspiracies against Fidel Castro and a whole bunch of other people, which was then resulted in a big investigation of that. It was a very satisfying story to cover until I became a part of my own story.
The House of Representatives decided its report was not going to be made public. But you had a copy of it.
That's right. It was a report of the House Intelligence Committee, which had been planned to be made public, and then the House voted to suppress it. At that time, I had a draft of it, and as it turned out, the only draft in the free world. And people kept saying to me, you've shown it on television. We know you have it. You've reported from this thing. You have to make sure that for the sake of history, that the whole thing is published. I became convinced that that was true, not realizing that the difference between a television network and a newspaper is that a newspaper is not regulated and doesn't have to worry about that kind of retaliation. In any event, CBS refused to help me publish it. And in the end, I said I'd let it be published by anybody who would, which turned out to be the Village Voice in New York. And with the result that I was first suspended, sort of fired, an agreement was made that I would resign after the investigations were all over. Nina Totenberg learned about that and broke that on the air, and that was the end of that. And that was goodbye after 23 years to CBS.
And you became a cable pioneer?
Then I was invited by Ted Turner to become his very first editorial employee for a network that he was planning to establish in 1980 called the Cable News Network. And since I needed a job, but not knowing very much about cable, I took it and spent 5 lively years with Ted Turner until I had an argument with him. I have a talent for losing jobs.
But then you came here.
And then I came here and I decided this is the last job for me. I'll see what I can do about not getting fired for once. And I've had a wonderful time here because with my age, I become a guy who has a monopoly on history. So people are always coming in and asking me, what happened 50 years ago, when? And so I'm respected as an aging person, and I still now have the time to think a little and phone a little and read a little and write the kind of thing that you don't much get to write in television today.
NPR's senior news analyst, Daniel Schorr, author of Staying Tuned, A Life in Broadcast Journalism.